get a little bit more energy. That's caffeine. I only have caffeine. But what are you guys talking about?
What are you guys talking about? Oh, man, I'm about to cough.
I gotta do it again. We gotta do it again because that sounded like how we feel. Let's try it one more time. Hold on. Get the air in. What are you guys talking about?
What are you guys talking about?
Oh my god, we had to do 2 times. We're keeping that in because okay. Jesus, that's how Hagrid. I love that word because Hagrid is the word, but I feel Hagrid. Like, I just feel like ass. We've had 5 days of Fright Fest plus a day of work today. And yeah, man, I'm like ready to pass out in my chair here. And I think Ed's in the same boat. It has been a long week. It's one of those things that, like, I was catching up with a buddy of mine at Fright Fest on the last day. And he was like, Jason, I've hardly seen you. You know, you talked to me for like 5 minutes. You've been jumping in and out. And then you've been in your hotel room all morning. And like, what people didn't know is like, the reason I was in the hotel room all morning, and this could be a funny story, but it's not, was because I got a book that I liked. And so like, I literally read 212 pages in 2 days because otherwise the person I needed to talk to about their book was going to be gone. So it was like, well, I better get this done before we do that. And then lo and behold, the third day, a guy who's going to be on the podcast, I'm so excited about this, Matthias, man, it's going to be so awesome. But he, you know, we sit around and talk film at Fright Fest, right? We kind of just sit around and whether you're a fan or whatever, I do tend to hang out with the filmmakers because I'm that kind of person, but that's because I have a lot of questions for them. And I was hanging out with the filmmakers and one particular one turned to me and says, oh, you need to watch my film, The Warrior's Gate. And I love filmmakers who do this because that's not his famous one. You know, that's the one no one... It's his pride and joy, and it played at Fright Fest, but it wasn't the one that, like, put a name to him. So I went and watched it the next morning. I bought it right then and there next to him, which I always love doing that because it made him smile immediately. And that just makes me smile. It's like, yeah, man, you made a film. I'll buy the film. But then I watched the film in the morning, and it was, like, epically awesome. Like, it was so good. So then I had to call him and be like, you're going to be on my podcast. And that took an entire day to kind of convince him that it was a good idea and that I wasn't scary. So, and I probably am scary, but who cares? So, you know, for those of you that saw me for 5 minutes, like, I love you guys. Like, and I wasn't trying to be mean or anything like that. But it ended up being, and I said to Ed before I was going, I wasn't going to work. I always say that. I said, I'm not going to work it. I'm just going to watch the films. And it kind of ended up being just the opposite. It was like, I want to work a ton and see a couple films when I'm not working. That's how digital went. So I guess I was just doing what I've done at Fright Fest for a couple of years. The funny thing about Fright Fest, guys, is it's not a market. Like, I treat it like a market, as if someone's going to buy my film there. Like, there's not anyone buying films at that place. It's just a bunch of filmmakers. But so that's where we are. That's why I sound like absolute rat ass, whatever, because I haven't slept properly in days. And probably won't for a while, just because we got so much to do, and this is how it is when you're kind of knee-deep. At the same time, I've got a busy day job that's going on right now, and a bunch of other stuff going on with that, so anyways, I'll stop bitching, because Ed's just looking at his phone like, I hate you. I had to go into work today. You got to work from home. How are you doing, Eddie Spaghetti?
Good. I'm just looking over my notes that I wrote for Freaky, which is the film that we're doing today, by the way.
Yes.
I had a great weekend. I caught a couple of really good films, which I'm sure we'll discuss when Mitch comes on and stuff like that. It was really good. It was really nice seeing people. Like, I'm always amazed. The Fright Fest crew are always so just sweet and welcoming and stuff. So it was great seeing people that I hadn't seen for a couple of years.
It was a wonderful, it was the first proper vacation I've had since COVID started. So yeah, right. But man, am I feeling it now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, wow, what a vacation. So we are talking about Freaky today, guys. And before I go too far with that, two things. One, there may be some new listeners because I'm going to drop this on the Fright Fest group just for a little while. I know you guys get tired of my spamming, but it is my job as a producer to tell you how cool our stuff is. So if you're joining us now, what is this show? Well, this show is Edward Burgos and myself. Go to the webpage and see who we are if you care. You know, we're indie filmmakers talking about film, TV, and everything else. Okay, there really isn't any one through line through this other than we make films, we talk about films, like we live film. And so this is our way of kind of telling you what it's like inside the studio. Because when we write our own things or when we are helping on other people's projects, these are all the inspirations we have, you know, whether it's an indie film or a big budget film. So some particular things about the show, if you're interested, and this is like, this comes across cool to you, we are MCU nerds. So like, please, if you are into Marvel, we have tons of podcasts about good Marvel stuff, and it is something we like talking about. Recently, we've run across a lot of good TV. I spent some time over the weekend, and I think Ed, unfortunately, going to have to hear it a second time. Ed hears all the stories, like 300, 400, 500 times, because he's always right next to me. And I'm like, were you there? And he's like, yeah, I was there. Dickhead. You know what I mean? But we talked about Atlanta with a lot of people. And I actually remember specifically on John Dodson, who's an awesome guy, by the way. I remember putting on your phone, Teddy, the short I was talking about. And everybody kept thinking I was talking about a short film. So I was like, no, not the Teddy Bear's Picnic short film from a couple years ago. No, Teddy from Atlanta. Mm. Watch it on Disney Plus. It's still one of the scariest things I've ever seen. It's amazing. Really just good. Amazing. So that's what I mean. That's what the podcast is about. We will try our best to tell you how we look at story, because it affects our writing. How we look at shots, because that's how Ed sets up the shots. And generally, always something on production. Part of the reason people do listen to podcasts is because we wax lyrical about understanding the business end of this thing just as much as the creative, because that's part of getting your film made.
And hopefully we can introduce you to some pretty cool films as well.
That's probably the real reason people listen, but I'd like to think it's because I say something intelligent the whole time, but it's likely that's not the case. So yes, if you'd like to see new material that is fun and talked about in an interesting way, that's another good reason to join us.
Amen.
All right. So Brass Tacks, second part that I have to do. Again, please like, share, and subscribe this, guys. We need that kind of stuff. That keeps us going. That keeps the image alive. That keeps, you know, just everything going for us. So you can catch us on the website, www.lovevictoriaproductions.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Jason Shiro, Edward Burgos, or Love Victoria Productions. Instagram, we have a Jazzy J Shiro and an Nano LVP. Twitter, it's at Mouth. Love Victoria, or at Ananaski Prod, or LinkedIn. It's just Love Victoria Productions is the page there. Also, LVP Film Life on TikTok. As I say, when I get something cool to post, I always do.
Down with the youths.
Oh, I like making the videos. It's just, unfortunately, it's time. Again, time. I need to clone myself like 10 times, and then I can get all this stuff done. But it's just a matter of time. And unfortunately, Sundays, like Friday the 13th was the last time I had time to make a funny video. So I made something, put it up, and gets like 600 views, so you're like, okay, that'll work. You know what I mean? So anyways, please like, share, subscribe, and comment. People rarely comment. I don't know if that's because I'm intimidating or just because they're bored or just no one cares.
I think people don't generally comment. It's kind of a rare thing.
I know. You know me. I'm like, he always makes his face too, because I'm like waiting for the troll. Like, I wanted trolls and we didn't get trolls. We got really nice people. We get some people like, oh, I love your show. We never get anybody who's like, I fucking hate you, man. And I'm like, I want to do it. I'm like, ah. Anyways, comment on the stuff, man. If you guys like it, if you don't like it, whatever. But today, we're going to talk about Freaky. First, we talk about what else we saw this week, though. This can be everything. It doesn't have to be Fright Fest. Mm-hmm. So we'll recap. We're going to do next week, just to give you the upcoming shows. Mitch Bain will be on next week. We didn't want to do it this week because there's a digital Fright Fest as well. Plus, he was like literally going to be home yesterday, and I just didn't want to bug him for it. So next week, we're going to do the Fright Fest recap with Mitch Bain, our first guest in a while. So it'll be really good for that. And then I said later down the road, I've got to email him and find out what works best for him. But we'll have Matthias on to talk about. It's the director of Cockneys v. Zombies, but also The Warrior's Gate, a movie that is criminally underviewed.
I'm excited to watch it from what you've
done. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's one of those things, I think it came out at the wrong time. And we're going to talk about that on the podcast with him there. And that's why we wanted to invite him to kind of talk about it with us. So, without further ado, what else did you watch this weekend?
Well, I caught up with Ted Lasso, which is one of our favorite TV shows.
It is.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm really liking kind of the direction it's going in. It's still hilarious, but it's expanding on characters and developing characters, which I think any good sitcom needs to do, particularly after its first season where it's established its shtick, so to speak. I also caught up with
Ted Lasso, so you watched the latest episode, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you feel like they've taken the foot off the gas just a little bit?
It
felt a bit like a wandering episode.
I guess it feels, one of the great things about Ted Lasso, I think, is that it kind of goes against your expectations in a lot of ways. And this, it feels like it's going with expectations. I don't know if they're building up to something, but
definitely what was going to happen, happened. You were the one that called it when the season started, when we did the Ted Lasso podcast. You said the psychiatrist is the most important character because this will come back
with Ted.
That was the end of that episode, if I remember correctly.
Not exactly the end. The very end was a nice little twist the man who Rebecca had been texting with and she feels really connected right.
is
Sam Obisanya,
which I just think is brilliant. Players. And yeah. I turned to Becky during that and I said, they set that up in the first episode.
Yeah.
In the first season, you know. I remember the episode where he's in there talking to her and she's smiling at him. Mm. But she doesn't really know why she's smiling at him. She doesn't figure it out. So that could be very interesting.
Yes, I'm excited to see kind of.
I'm just
kind of
sad for you, mate. I thought it was going to be you. They were going to be the reveal. You know,
in my dreams, me and Rebecca. I also caught up with What If. Are you caught up?
I've seen the first two. Okay. The third one is supposed to be. You can tell me the premise for the third one.
The third one is what if Earth's greatest heroes were killed?
Oh, so you're gonna like death to the Avengers kind of.
Yes.
Oh, those are always good ones.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool because it was very comic booky, which I really liked. But the latest one that came out today, which is Doctor Strange.
Ooh, that's the romance.
What if Doctor Strange didn't lose his hands, but he lost his heart?
Ooh.
And boy, is it good.
Yeah, they said that was the one. Whoa. They said that was the one. Okay, good. At least I have something to watch when I get home tonight.
But the one thing that I definitely wanted to talk about, which I just saw, is Doug Days. Which is a little kind of short spin-off about the dog from Up that has the collar that allows him to speak.
He's amazing, yeah.
He's amazing. And the first episode is called Squirrel. And you need to watch it because you're just going to think of Boo, like, immediately. Your dog. It's hilarious.
Well, no, I've been... These are the concepts I can put on the podcast because no one's going to listen and steal this idea. No one's going to care anyway. But I had a concept on it. I've been filming Boo because, obviously, most people don't know this, but, like, my dog's dying. Like, she's not dead, and she's not even close to death, but she's very old.
She's not young, yeah.
And you have to remember, this is... I raised her from 4 weeks old, so it's hard when you're coming to the end and you know it.
Yeah.
So I've been filming her,
and
I've been filming her and filming her and filming her because I just... These will be the things I watch next year or the year after. When
you might even edit something together.
That was my concept. Like, I wanted to do... I can do an old person's voice. I've been doing it for Catherine in one of her books. And I was like, I wanted to voice... Like, I think I'd have to do it as an old man because I don't think I can do an old woman. But I just wanted to do something like that. And then at the very end, I was going to, like, turn the camera on so you could see it was me the whole time that was, like, talking about how sad I was. That, you know, talking about what she would be saying right now, because you can see it. Like, it's one of the things I do encourage people to like take care of animals, because they do teach you things about life. Like, I learned this from my last dog, not from her, but, you know, I'm learning it more through her because she's old. I've never taken that care of anything that's old. Like, and I know that sounds horrible, but it's like, it teaches you about like what it's like when a person can't really do anything for themselves anymore. And what that's like and what that is to you, and kind of like, it's the kind of thing that goes on a lot longer than you think, too. I remember my sister talking about this, because my sister talked, you know, took very good care of my grandmother before she passed. And it was hard, because she was like, you just, you know, you're living in this kind of morbid certainty, but in the same sense, it doesn't happen that instant. And so that's the hardest part. I don't even like talking about my dog this way, because she's alive, you should be enjoying it, but... It just, you know, it's interesting. So anyways, that's I'm talking dog. I love talking dog.
Yeah, so Doug Days, definitely worth checking out. Really short. There's only 5 episodes. And the reason why I started watching it, talking about, like, depressing things, is that, of course, Ed Asner, who voiced...
is that the voice of the guy?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
And he passed away last week.
He did,
so
yes, he did.
I was kind of in the mood for just rewatching Up in his kind of honor, and then I saw that.
That must have been where the release came from, then. They were like, well, we might as well put this out now so people can enjoy
it. I mean, it was the last thing that I think he worked on, so, you know, and it's beautiful. Like, I cried at the end of it, you know. Really, really beautiful.
No, Up's a weird one for me, because I resist Up every time. I know why that's a good film. Like, that's another thing. Like, that's an easy one to like put out to you viewers. Like, how do I write a good film? Like, watch that. Like, that hits on core things that that's what Pixar's very good at.
Yeah.
Pixar's incredibly good at picking out things that everybody worries about: death and family and, you know, what.
Growing up.
And they put it in very practical ways in impractical worlds, because they can, because they have animation. So again, like, the opening to Up is always, like, the most traumatic thing to me, because that's, like, very much part of my character.
It's hard to watch, yeah.
It's very, well, it's like, that's what I mean, you know what I mean? And I'm a narcissist, so everything's about me. But that particular scene, that particular section about meeting that person and then planning the rest of your life with them, like, that is very much how I tick, you know what I mean? Like, if anyone knows me, they know that's how I met my wife, and kind of how I see myself. Mm. So the idea of her...
It's definitely a romantics film, I think.
Yeah, something like that. So
for me, that's probably like peak Pixar. There were still some very good films that came after it, but for me, that was like when they were...
And I've not seen what people like... I've never seen The Good Dinosaur, because that was supposed to be like shit Pixar.
Horrible.
Or the Cars sequels.
That was a money grab. Onward was great. You know, we loved Onward.
We loved Onward, yeah. Luca, did you see Luca?
I really liked Luca.
Luca was so Italian, that's why I loved it. It was funny because the whole time I'm watching it with Becky and Catherine, I kept talking about Spring, which is the movie that takes place there. That's my movie about the Italian Riviera. Yeah. But it just was funny. I was like, they really nailed the location on this. And you can't go there. So that's why I thought it was so impressive to animate it in a way that made you feel like you were right there on the coast. So, yeah. No, very cool stuff. Okay, so let's get to talking about... We skipped first impressions. Should we do first impressions?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so you heard about what we watched this week. We're skipping around. We're dead tired, guys. We're sorry. We moved first impressions to after. First impressions. So just in case somebody may not want to watch this film, you know, recommendations for who? Who would want to see this? Who wouldn't want to see this, Ed?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if like some of the really hardcore Frightfesters might not be huge on this.
Absolutely.
Just because it is very kind of horror light, right?
Yeah, let's put it out there. It's a slasher, guys. So the problem
it's a slasher body swap movie.
Yeah, slasher, that's the easiest way to describe it. That's what you get in the first 5 minutes. Yeah. I mean, or from the tagline.
Yeah.
This is a Blumhouse, and the only other thing I would add is a Blumhouse slasher, you know, switch story.
Mm.
And so I, you know, we love this. Oh, we were talking so about good. I watched, the reason we're doing this is, again, why you didn't see me. This was on in my hotel. So while I was trying to write emails to people, I was like, I might as well watch something. And this was on. And then I had to put the computer away because I was like, I want to watch this now. Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones. I hear what you're saying. If you are looking for, if you're looking at this as a horror that's going to scare you, or a horror that is going to open your eyes to some new revelation, avoid.
Yeah, it's not Gaspar Noé. It's not Ari Aster.
No. Oh man, we talked about him so much
over the weekend. I know.
And then the best one. Shout out to Mike Hewitt. Okay, shout out to Mike Hewitt, former distributor over at Arrow. He's doing his own thing now. We are going to sit, me and you, and have a long conversation about distribution because I'd love to pick your brain. But Mike was getting ready to go out. I think it was the day before I was like faltering, and I was like totally like, I'm not kidding. By like day five, Ed, like I felt like I was going to die. And I'm just being honest with you, listeners, because like I haven't drank and partied like that in a long time. Mm. And so, yeah, I wasn't probably coping as well as I was making it out to people. So fifth day, I'm like, it's the last day. You got to go. Like you got to get up and go.
Right.
And I'm doing stuff, but I'm doing stuff slow. And I'm like, I really don't care if I see any films today. I just want to go to bed. And then I chat Twitter, and on Twitter, Mike had posted, and he said, listen, really struggling to come out, and it was the night before, so this would have been for the Sunday, really struggling to come out, so just watch the first 10 minutes of Climax. So, lo and behold, I bought Climax, because it's no longer on Netflix, I bought Climax, and watched the first 10 minutes, and I'm telling you, that's why I showed up looking like a rock star, because I just was so invigorated, I was like, yeah, yeah, because I love that first 10 minutes.
But this is not that. Having said that... Having said that, though,
I'm sorry, I'm so tired.
I think it has like some really great like nods, and it's a Blumhouse, right? So,
absolutely.
Like the kills are fantastic. I know what my next Halloween costume is going to be.
Right,
which is half racket through the head, kit. So easy, but like brilliant. I love it.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Now, I mean, Jason Blum was mentioned a truckload over the weekend, which we can get into when we're off of first impressions. But yeah, you know what you get from this guy, okay? Like, he makes films that are generally liked by the public. Why? Because that's how he knows to bankroll the film.
Yeah, I think he has an eye for the commercial viability of a film, even though it could be, you know, very indie and very horror, you know?
So that's the thing. We would find it hard to find people who hated this film, but if you did... We're sorry. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's not for everyone, that's for sure.
There's certainly a group that would say that this is dumb and doesn't go anywhere. probably the same people that said it about Happy Death Day. That's another, right. Yeah. This is the other film from this guy. So if you were like, Happy Death Day was the stupidest thing I've ever seen, then avoid this one.
Probably, yeah. It also made me think of, was it Tragedy Girls?
Again,
it had that kind of comedic vibe to it.
The original slasher that does this, because I just watched not too long ago, is Scream.
Right.
You know, that was the twist on the slasher. But the reason they're like this, guys, so moving out of first impressions, there you go. Now we're going to spoil things if we want to. I don't know if we will. I'm just too tired to do first impressions. You know, the formula is there, guys. Slashers are the easiest horror formula because you know exactly what you're going to do. And your whole job is to take that form and, like, it's not even save the cat. You literally already know what you have to do. Yeah. It's just you have to make it unique. It has to be something new on that. And surprisingly, like, it's one of those infinite reality things that, like, surprisingly, I don't think you'll ever run out of a particular twist on it, but that's what you have to do. You know what I mean? How does the...
I really like this idea of mashing the slasher movie with, you know, the body swap kind of rom-com or comedy, you know? I think that it's similar to, you know, Happy Death Day, where it's like the Groundhog Day concept along with
I think so. Film, I think the reason you have to do things like that in this case, when you're talking about a film that you're going to throw at least a big actor in, because what was the budget on this film? I haven't done any of the research yet. I'm very sorry.
$6 million.
Right. Wow.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Never mind.
No.
I was about to say, if you're going to throw money at this, I'm like, that's not money, guys.
No, that's
super
reasonable.
So Vince Vaughn was in this film for $6 million.
Yeah.
Passion project.
I can see it though as well, because
Really enjoyed the role in this.
Yeah, and not in a kind of, you know, Wedding Crashers, just where he's just hilarious, because he's got that in his locker. But it was actually a little bit more the intimate scenes and the scenes with the mother and the kind of emotional stuff.
Because he's also been in controversially, because that particular production house is always like now associated with the right, and I hate that because it's like, guys, like the filmmakers, like, so many are from all over the place. But he was in, what was it, the Cell Block one, where he plays a really scary guy.
Cell something. Was it a cell and then a number, or am I thinking about the Spanish film?
No. I think that was it. And he plays the inmate there, right? Yeah. So
I've always thought that he's got chops.
That's what I mean. Like, he was able to do both. So, because he's like 6'7". He's like my father-in-law. He's huge. Guy, yeah. Like, and Mike, you're a cool guy. But you know what I mean? Like, he's tall. He never, like, Swingers is the best example. He plays this, like, guy could have been like a miniature. You know what I mean? Like, he's just so jumpy and everything like that with Jon Favreau. But this is like his ability to do both sides. So he gets to be the menacing.
Yeah, the physical presence.
There are moments of, like, I would say it's like teenage horror. It'd be the kind of thing, if I showed it to my daughter when she's a little bit older, she might freak out a little bit. For me, because I've seen 6 billion horror movies, obviously nothing he was going to do was really going to scare me. But he is playing a psychotic killer when he's doing that. Like, he does it well.
The Jason Voorhees kind of.
Right.
But I really kind of liked some of the undertone themes. Like, this idea of feeling, you know, with a lack of power when you're a woman and you're small and you're not big and strong, you know. And I liked how they went for an entertaining, you know, gore filled film, but it had a little bit of heart.
Yeah, that's
as well.
The first impressions bit, because the comments made about, I know exactly what you're talking about. The comments when you see the transformation. So when she is now him. And then she becomes like Vixen, you know, puts on the red jacket, ties the hair back, looks more like one of my girlfriends, you know what I mean, from that era.
But not even that, though, like her physicality.
She stands up, like, taller,
yeah,
right?
The way she moves, you know, like, I was super impressed. I knew Vince Vaughn was going to kill it. I was super impressed with
that. She killed it as
was
well.
Was it Millie? No, Catherine Newton.
Catherine Newton.
Yeah. She kind of stole the show for me, actually.
It's one of those things that you would have to have good performances from both. Who was the director on this?
Christopher Landon.
Yeah, that's right. Same guy that did Happy Death Day. So, I mean, I mean, it's another Blumhouse special, because he delivered it on Happy Death Day, where he took those. I'm pretty sure those were no-name actors in that one. Here, I'd be intimidated having Vince Vaughn on the set, but he manages to get the best out of both of them. It's one of the strongest points of this. But again, it reminds me that the first impressions, we said, those are the cliches as well. So the journeys that each of them go are as save the cat as you can get. Like, this is One guy, you know, the psycho killer learns that it's difficult being small and powerless, and the small and powerless girl learns what it's like to feel like a 6'7" badass serial killer. Mm-hmm. And it ends up having that cathartic, you know, cathartic change on, and I don't believe it's a buddy film. I don't think we're seeing a buddy film between Vince Vaughn and her character. Mm-hmm. I think it's more a dude with a problem, and we're looking at her kind of walking and solving that problem. I could be very wrong on that. It's just the catharsis happens on her, I think, more than anyone else. And it's that kind of realization that she can kind of move forward with things and that she is more powerful than she thinks she is. Mm-hmm. But I love that kind of stuff. It's just whether you do, you don't. As I said, I could totally feel like I was sitting next to five people that would be like, this is so cliche. But those are like my art house friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you really shouldn't be watching this film.
Right,
because exactly. It was more based
it's
on like
people complain about Marvel movies. It's like, okay. I go
back to the original example from Korea that I still love. Connor, you've been immortalized through this because she turns to me and she says, but Jason, it was so unrealistic. And I was like, it's fucking Transformers!
How do you feel about like body swap movies? Do you like that genre?
It's a good question. If it's done well, I don't know. I've never really seen it done seriously, if I'm honest. I'm trying to think of the serious ones, because I tend to like serious films over comedies. Hmm. In a comedy, I like them, but I've never really loved them. You know, like, I'm thinking, isn't it Lindsay Lohan in one, and Jamie Lee Curtis is another
yeah.
one?
Yeah,
or is that the same one?
Then
all the ones, there were. See, this is why you're asking, because there were a shitload in the 80s. Yeah, like, when we were growing up, yeah. Big was the one everyone remembers. That's actually probably my least favorite, like, I tell you, there's one with Judge Reynolds in it. Mm-hmm. That was good. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the guy from Growing Pains, Kirk Cameron,
okay.
was the other one on that one. And then there's another one with Fred Savage, or Ben Savage, which is the old Fred Savage. No, Fred Savage, yeah. The older Savage.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does a swap with somebody. And that one was good that I remember.
Yeah, and there's 13 Going on 30 with Jen.
Never seen that one, but I know the songs from that one.
It's fun. I like There's no example of a body swap movie that I didn't really like, but you're right. I don't know if it's ever been pushed very far. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's all about my favorite body swap is a non-body swap. It's Arthur. Arthur is all about a grown man acting like a child. You know what I mean? And I just love that film because of that. And I love it's really fun.
Brewster's Millions, I love for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, that's I think the better concept for me, but no, I don't dislike them either.
When I was in Korea, I was actually writing a feature to do a body swap between an English teacher and their student.
Okay.
And, you know, because I thought that would sell really well in Korea.
It would sell really well, period. Write it down, mate. Put it in the card. Write this stuff down. Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I guess my complaint more than anything else is this is the first time I can think of that this has been done really well. Don't get me wrong. Now, saying this, we watched a movie, which we can save to talk about with Mitch, we can talk about now, that was about body swapping, but a different type of body swapping.
Oh, Evie.
That was more of a double... No, the other one.
The Changed.
The Changed, yeah.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
Because they do border on like doppelganger films as well. Yeah, so, like, yeah. And I love doppelganger films. Those are definitely up there with like my favorites, Us being like one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I feel like the bar's been set very high with Us, though.
I don't know. People say that. Everybody's been saying that. I'm like, no, I think it's that people don't want to grasp on the fact that that's what you have to... Maybe that's exactly what you're saying, but I'm like, I don't think it's impossible to write that story again. Mm. I don't think it's impossible to do something that has that kind of depth again, but you sure as shit better do it this time.
Right.
You can't go back to this kind of stuff where it's more cookie cutter and kind of doing that.
Yeah,
so
But
yeah, body swap is a genre. I mean, it should be explored, I think, more. I don't know how you break it out of the slasher, but you should be... Right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, again, racial, you know,
I'm pretty
differences,
sure there's been some ghost body swap ones.
Remember
as well.
Also in Lovecraft Country, where they have a couple of episodes.
God, yeah, those are the best. Is that
those were good?
Were those body swaps?
Not really. It's more like a kind of skin change, like a
no. But you're right. It's the same concept. You're right. Now I'm remembering it now because that's when she wakes up as a white woman.
Wow. Which is very. It's an interesting concept.
Crazy,
you know,
right? Absolutely crazy.
But yeah, no, I really like this. I thought it was really fun and. I don't think it was disrespectful to the horror genre, you know.
I think that's why it's the hesitancy.
You know, vampires suck, or do you know what I mean? Even something like Scary Movie, which I love back in the day.
You're saying, is this border on parody?
Right.
Because we love parody in horror as well. you know, my wife's, God, I still remember watching this film, Scream If You Know What I Did Last Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And that's like, she loves that film. And I'm always like, are you kidding me? Like, to be fair, it has Tiffany Amber Thiessen and Tom Arnold.
I could see it as a guilty pleasure, definitely. But it does seem like lazy filmmaking, you know?
To be fair, I thought that was less lazy filmmaking than Scary Movie. Scary Movie Interesting. Was okay. lazy filmmaking to me.
Yeah, because I guess.
It was shot for shot.
Yeah.
What they were taking before, and I'm like, if you hadn't done it shot for shot, I'd be fine with it. Mm. But they throw in, I think, a little bit of I Know What You Did Last Summer. Mm. There's like two or three scenes from that, but everything else is shot by shot Scream. And I just was like, how fucking lazy are you people? Like, you know, I don't know. Officer Doofy's still pretty funny, so. But I get what you mean. This was not one of those. This isn't a parody. I mean, it does have its funny moments, and let's talk about that. So. We keep dancing around. The comedy shines through in this film. Mm. Like, much, even more so than the horror. Even though the deaths are pretty gory, I still think the comedy is even better.
I must say, though, I expected the comedy. I thought it's a very funny premise. I don't know if I expected quite so many good deaths.
No, they talked about that. Like, and I think it is a good point to bring up. And I'm as guilty of this as any, because I've been talking about dandelions over the weekend. And it was like, does anyone die in that? I'm like, no. Like, there wasn't even any blood or gore. You know, it's just a movie about the forest. The guy who did The Sadness, which was the last film, most people said it was the best film of the fest. I would agree. It was really good. Like, it was just gory. It was dark. It was bleak. It was everything you want from, like, it's a zombie film. And so it was like, yeah, that's crazy. Straight out of Taiwan. But the guy was a Canadian director. You would have loved this, because this guy was total expat like we used to be. Like, came out, he's like, well, I just made this movie because there was this rich pop star in Taiwan that owns a movie company, and he asked me to make a screenplay, and he asked me to make a film, and you're like, that sounds pretty dope. Exactly, like, nice. So he was very humble about the whole thing, but he says, like, I wanted, and the joke has been that has followed the movies that he required 50 gallons of blood per day to be provided. And he was like, listen, he's like, I did say, I want blood every day, and I want to make sure we don't run out of it. I did not specify in no uncertain terms. And, you know, it was just one of those things. That's why I had to chuckling, because you know what I mean. Like, I love how that rumor mill got going. Mm. Probably started by someone like me, you know, just to get the buzz going. But what he talked about, he says, and this is because I want you to enjoy this film as a horror fan. Mm. He's like, I didn't make this with any, you know, it, completely the opposite of when I make a film, and it's like, it's all about this, and it has this in the background. Like, he's like, it's just a horror film. I just wanted to make something gory. I just wanted to make something fun. Mm. You know, and that's it from start to finish. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's very much what it executes on. Like, but he says, I do this because I find that horror has become far too sanitized. And he's like, I just don't think people push boundaries as much. I would tend to agree with him lately. Mm-hmm. We've gotten very meta. The same way we were talking about how we're very tired of stories that now just kind of reflect on everything and say, like, oh, it's not popular. So cynical. Mm-hmm. We want stories that are happy. Like, we did go through a long period, I think, in horror ed where we're more interested in, you know, showing the story than we are about killing anyone. And unfortunately, it's horror. So it's like, well... Like, somebody was asking me why I liked Midsommar, and I was laughing because I was like, how could you not like Midsommar? Like, oh, it's 2.5 hours long. The deaths are as boring as can be. Does anything actually happen? I was like, you know what? You're right. There are some points of Midsommar I will concede are a bit slow, you know? But I was like, but the colors, man, the colors are just amazing. But I think that's his point, is like, sometimes we get way too wrapped up in our own kind of like, ooh, the meaning or the semblance of all this, when we're like, dude, horror movies are horror movies. Mm. Like, they used to just be... dude with a knife slashes at 6 billion different people.
I guess, though, I really liked, you know, the whole theme, because the main character, I think her name is Millie in the film.
That's right.
She's lost her father, and her mother is, like, not dealing well with it, you know?
She's an alcoholic, yeah.
Yeah, she's an alcoholic, and she's kind of, like, pressuring Millie to stay and not go off to college and stuff like that. And, you know, there's that great scene where Vince Vaughn, who has been changed into, you know, the 17-year-old girl, is in the changing room where her mother works. And they have this conversation and they kind of connect. And the stuff dealing with grief, like, I'm a sucker for father stories, you know.
Absolutely.
But I really liked it here. I thought that it would have been easy to be like, let's not worry about anything too deep. Let's just, you know, kills and laughs, kills and laughs, kills and laughs. But I think the fact that it's got peaks and valleys with moments of emotion I remember there's the other great scene where the boy that she has liked, you know, from the beginning.
Yeah, that's the scene of the movie for me where they're in the back seat together.
Yeah.
And I mean, they literally are like engaging in this kiss, which I would have just loved to direct that. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm watching this. And then he puts his hand on her face, it just was hilarious because that's when it just breaks the reality, right? Yeah. Because his hand is like as big as the guy's face.
Yeah. But again, I don't know. I thought the performances were like really good, and they got me to kind of feel the emotion.
If you were out there directing that, Ed, like imagine the smile that would have gone from ear to ear as you watched Vince Vaughn nail it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Absolutely nail it. And you watched the other actor who I don't know his name.
Yeah, the young
stay kid. In character and not lose his shit, because that's what it would have happened to me if I was trying to act that scene and Vince Vaughn is trying to come on to me like a 17-year-old girl. See what I mean? Like I just it was exactly what you said. And I'm not, you know, what I said before, I'm not saying that you have to take out, like you said, oh, I'm glad they didn't just take that out and keep the blood. Like, that's the melding of, you know, that's the evolution. We don't go back to Blood and Guts, even though Sadness was very Blood and Guts. That actually had kind of a story to it. But no, this is a big budget film. So again, we're talking, not a big budget film, sorry, a big market film. This is going to get theatrical release.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so when we're thinking about that, it is important to do what you're saying and to marry up some of these things. And where it's different, where it shines is those little moments, because again, it's you're taking someone out of the slasher bit, and you're putting them into something they can relate to. Because thank God, none of us has been chased around by a maniac with a knife.
And unfortunately, man, the, you know, the wider world of acting and writing does look down on horror. It's just it's a fact, and I think that by giving those people who disdain horror just, you know, or something, and show, look, it's not what you think it is, which is just blood and guts and that's it, right? There can be more to this. I think you appeal to a wider audience, and like you say, this is the kind of film that, okay, it cost very little, it didn't make a lot. I think it was 16 mil at the box office, which is still pretty good for a 6 million.
Right, and I can speak briefly about it, because I talked to someone about production on it that was at Fright Fest, and they were giving me a bit of background on it. Which I can do now.
Go for it, yeah.
So this one came out right before COVID. And so it was nailed by the fact that, A, it had a really late UK release date, but also a late international release date. And because of COVID, it kind of all got swept under. My friend had said that he was only able to catch this on iTunes America for the longest time. You know, because he was saying, oh, is this in the hotel you were in? He's like, yeah. He's like, this movie hasn't been over here, you know, very long at all. So that probably is part of it. It never had much of it. I remember it being in Cineworld right in COVID. So it would have been
That's a shame.
It would have been the summer of COVID, I think, because I think it was August that I was looking. Whenever Cineworld had reopened, people, it was one of the first things
maybe
available.
Maybe late July, early August.
Yeah. So, and it just, obviously no one was going to go see it because it was up against everything else that was big at the time.
But actually, that makes me think, like, 16.2 is not bad for a $6 million picture.
Absolutely not.
And, like, I genuinely think that this, A, is going to do very well on video on demand and streaming and stuff like that.
It may do, yeah.
But I think it had the potential of being, like, a sleeper hit. Do you know what I mean?
I definitely, Happy Death Day was. That's why they're on the third Happy Death Day. I haven't even seen the second one. But, I mean, that movie, I caught, I always tell the story, I wasn't going to watch anything that week, but I always try to see one movie at Cineworld. Not to support Cineworld, even though I love you guys, but because I think it's important for a producer to see a movie in a film, you know, in a theater. And there was nothing playing. And Happy Death Day was the only thing there. So I went to it being like, oh, shit horror movie. And usually, I'm being honest, usually picking the shit horror movie, like whatever new Conjuring's out or whatever, it's a bad go. You're going to be like, I should have watched this at home.
Right.
Because half the people get bored halfway through the film and turn on their phones.
It's not a great, like,
it's the complete opposite of what you want. And so usually for, like, genre horror films, sorry guys, you usually get me at home. Like, I think I gotta talk to you after the podcast about Candyman, because someone took my wife to that, but that's about it. Like, I don't see horror, I see him at my house.
Tony Todd, you're the best. So
Happy Death Day, it just, that blew away, and it did blow the box office away too. The numbers for that were way higher than they should have been.
Yeah,
this is the Blumhouse special, man. This is why he is the best thing in Hollywood. And one of the things we were lamenting over the weekend, and lamenting's the wrong word, but I wish there were more Jason Blums, because he's tied to Universal. It's the only reason he can do this, guys. Like, the only reason he takes a punt with, like, 10 to 15 films a year, sometimes more, and he hands the money to the director. He's notorious for just handing the money over and saying, you got this now.
Do what you do.
Do what you do. It's really good. And he hits gold, what, 75% of the time, 60% of the time? But Universal eats the losses for the rest of it, so he can do it all up again the next year. And it works. He's produced in the last, you know, how many years, the best horror stuff that's out there.
A lot of very good
stuff. Some shit stuff as well. Like, we're not saying it's all been good, but that's what happens as a studio, guys. If you're ever thinking of that model, you know, want to know kind of how we look at this, like, that's the studio model. You're going to have to take bad films with good films, because that is the point. Like, that's why we do the show. Like, good films can end up badly. Bad films can end up well as well, but you know what I mean? Like, God, the coffins of good films that were destroyed by either bad reviews or bad timing in release or whatever, it's just sad. So, sorry, that was a bit of like, that's why this film is so cool, because again, it's showing you the model. You make 5 of these types of films a year,
yeah,
you're fine.
You're making good money, yeah.
Because this is formulaic. This is stuff that we know people... And like, I watched this this documentary on the Friday of Fright Fest called The Brilliant Terror, which it's mostly about indie filmmakers in America, which I think that's the through line. One of the other things that they put in there, I think because they had the footage and they didn't know what to do with it, being honest, is there's this discussion with psychologists about what fear is and why we like horror films. And it talked about the combination between your limbic system, and which is like your primal stuff. So that's like your caveman running stuff, and your thought process, which sits above. And it says when you can connect the two, that's when you get the best kind of stuff. So this had it, man. You had the serial killer chasing you in the night. That's your limbic system. That's the wolf that hunted you at night, Ed. Just you, not anyone else. And then you also have this kind of slice of life stuff. And the slice of life stuff, that's what really, I think, connects the two. So you get this primal experience of being scared. It's why horror will always be around, guys, because people are scared of the wolf that chases them at night. But then it also combines it with your modern drama stuff, which is this, you know, way of relating to, in Ed's case, it related to your, you know, to what you felt with you know, your own family and things like that. But then we had the 17, you know, we've all been in the situation with the girl that we kind of like, and, you know, we're not sure she kind of likes us as well. And I just thought that Vince Vaughn portraying that was the best possible way forward.
Did you have a favorite moment?
It would have definitely been that one, but I had a couple. So let me try to think of some of the other ones. I really liked the... oh, man, I'm trying to think of the particular scenes he was in, but the friend, the gay friend, I thought he was quite a good actor and had some really good comedy
Misha
scenes.
Misha Oshirovich, yeah.
Yeah, I thought some of his stuff was just really well thought out, like the point when he's, like, tied up the girl, and then he's like, no, I'm coming out as straight, and his mom's like, you're full of shit. You know what I mean? And it was trying to think, it was just those moments where I love... the high school comedy. Why? Because I was in high school, and I think that's why these films do so well. It brings you back to how nonchalant everything was back then, how much easier life was, even though it wasn't. You know what I mean? Everything's so microcosmic when you're in high school. So yeah, I mean, that's that character scene, especially when he's at his house with that one moment. I'm trying to think of some of the other really good ones. I want to say, like, when she wakes up as him, too, just because of the subtle reference. He's like, why do I smell like hot dog water? And it was like, that's not water. Like, oh, dear, that's a dirty sweater. Yeah. Stuff like that, you know what I mean? And then, like, the cop sister was pretty funny as well, man. She had some good lines in there at the end there where she's coming in. But maybe nothing stand out for that. So, yeah, that it would probably be, like, as I said, the scene I loved the most was the car scene. Which was just, but probably the other ones would go down to the chair scene. I just thought that was really well done. And he said it really well when he's like, why are you leaving me with a psychotic person in a chair?
Yeah. Murder Barbie.
How about yourself? Any others that stood out?
Yeah, I had... there were three for me that kind of really stood out. I already talked about the scene with her and her mother, or Vince Vaughn and the mother, in the changing room. I thought that was really, really good. I really liked the entrance montage when she goes to school wearing the red leather jacket and her hair up, and you got, like, the cool... kind of music at the beginning, and then it goes, like, really kind of heavy, you know, beat and stuff. I really like that. That was fun. But I think the moment where I just could not stop laughing was when Vince Vaughn was reciting the poem.
That's right.
So in order to convince the boy that she's in love
This is before the car scene. Yeah. The car scene's all about him being like, I remember that poem.
Yeah. To convince the boy that she's that Vince Vaughn, this very tall man, is actually Millie, this friend of his from school, she recites a poem that she had put in his locker, and it was such a bad teenager poem. And the sincerity with which Vince Vaughn delivered every single line was perfection.
No, I mean, I've always wanted to hang out with Vince Vaughn, but man, this just helped that, being like, I'd love you to improv some stuff for me now, just because, man, you are so talented.
But again, though, I think I was really nicely surprised by the fact that it wasn't, like, I think it would have been easy to really ham it up and just go for laughs and giggles.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's your director's eye. That's why you direct and I sit behind you and pretend to direct. I mean, you caught the fact that the reason this is not a shit film, there's sincerity to his performance there.
Yeah.
Not like serious sincerity.
It's still funny. It's
an actor's sincerity. In other words, he committed to it. He in his head said, what would I do? How can I make this theatrical? And he does. Mm. You know what I mean? As opposed to just what you would normally see is, actually, what have I been watching this week? And I was going to call you last night because you definitely need to watch it too. The Martin Short.
I just saw,
with Selena Gomez, who looks great in that, by the way. She's always like a little kid to me. And the other guy.
Yeah.
Martin Short and
not Chevy Chase.
No.
The other one.
God, why can't I remember his name? Blanked. This is the one in the show. He's most like me. He's so flamboyant. Oh my God, what's his name? I'm so tired. I'm very sorry. It's the guy from Father the Bride. That's the last time I can remember it.
The idiot.
Martin Short.
No, Martin Short's the little guy. Steve Martin.
So we said Martin Short. That's how tired I am. That's what I was thinking of, was Martin Short. No, Steve Martin. Steve Martin. Obviously.
Yeah.
God, I would always remember Steve Martin.
Yeah, is it good?
Yeah. Oh my God, is it good. Nice. Like, it's all about, I mean, yeah, it's a murder mystery podcast thing, New York. Like, if you like all three of those things, or you like any of the actors, and I say any, if you're a Selena Gomez fan, you'll like this as well, because this is first time I've seen her. And I didn't watch any of her, for the sake of the fact that it would make me feel like I was looking at Jailbait. I didn't watch like Spring Break or any of her I'm Becoming an Adult films.
Yeah, I had
that's
I had
the worst. With, I had that is the worst break, thing about being a dude in his 40s. Film. Yeah, because you want to watch these films, not just because they're good films, because, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Selena Gomez in a blah, blah, blah. But you saw her as a kid, so you're like, it's dirty, man. I'm just not going to do it. You know what I mean? I'm not going there.
But yeah, like the friends, I think both Misha Ostrovitz and Celeste O'Connor, who was Millie's other friend, I thought they were great supporting actors. There was also the teacher that gets cut in half in the woodwork.
Oh, he's one of the, that was one of the Baldwins.
Oh, is it? He's a Baldwin, is he?
Looks like a Baldwin, yeah.
He looks like a Baldwin. I've seen him in a bunch of stuff.
There is one actor out there that looks like a Baldwin but isn't a Baldwin. I'm pretty sure it was a Baldwin.
Okay.
Sorry, it's just, I don't know why I have that knowledge of the Baldwins, but if you grew up in the era we grew up in, they were in everything, so like, it was the Baldwins, the Arquettes, you know, like.
See, that just makes me think of South Park, though. When we retaliated for the attack on the Baldwins by bombing the Arquettes.
Yes! That's what I mean, though, because it's ridiculous. Like, how does that happen, you know? And that's why I'm like the Brothers Hemsworth, because it's like, do people just open their house and we're all going to be actors? No, not just you. Everyone in the house is going to act. And you will all look manly, and you will all be super cool, and we'll all be super rich. It'll be awesome.
Yeah.
Alec Baldwin forever. Good things.
Chainsaw to the balls, probably my favorite death.
Oh, good call on that one. No. Some of the deaths were a little bit, like, I do have qualms with, like, the cryo death, because that was, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that was the only one that was a real, real stretch.
Mm.
Even though I love that death. Everybody loved, the reason they did it is it's fun to freeze somebody and then break them into little pieces on the floor. But I've seen it before, and I didn't believe that a school would have a cryo tank just sitting there. You know what I mean? Sorry. That's just a safety hazard waiting to happen. But what were some of the other really good deaths? Yeah, the Chainsaw of the Balls was a pretty good one.
Like I said, the opening with where he breaks the racket and then just skewers the guy's head. Oh, loved it.
There were a bunch of deaths in that one, though, right? That's the last one.
That's the very first. The ball chainsaw is the last one, and there's a bunch of different deaths.
Okay.
But there's also the one where she rips through the wall and pulls him through.
That, yeah, maybe that one. Like,
that was a good one.
There were some good ones. There were definitely some good ones.
But again,
the buzzsaw one, like that one was...
cut completely in half. Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Maybe that had to happen. The guy was such an asshole.
Yeah, he had it coming.
Like, I just loved... That's the thing I loved is, like, people think that's cliche, but no, it's not. Mm. Like, the... I'm just having a sip here, folks. The jock who sits with his dipshit doghouse in the one class that you've got to get a pass in, but the teacher fucking hates you, so it's going to be hard to pass. This was gym class for me, guys. You know, when you got straight A's and everything else, and he's sitting there, I love my fucking doghouse. And the teacher's like, that's great. And then he fucking yells at you. I was like, dude, that is so shot. I didn't have to take shop class. I had gym class, but that was gym class. It's like, teacher just doesn't like you because you do well at everything else. Hmm. So, yeah. And it was a shit dark house. So, yeah, I mean, that's where I think, you know, going into maybe a little bit at the end here, what can you take from this? Some people would call this cookie cutter. I do not. I say this is why you can write this script and you can give it to Jason Blum. And I don't think he'll let you direct it just off your first film, because that's just the breaks these days. But you're certainly going to get someone's attention if you can do something like this. Mm. And so, you know... I'm just not a reinvent the wheel kind of person. Mm-hmm. Like, I have, I think, some very creative things that are different from the norm, but in the same sense, if you can write a screenplay that's going to pay you money, you know, that follows what it says, this is another one to do it. There was clearly an act one, there was clearly an act two, there was clearly an act three.
I noticed that. Like, at 20 minutes is when she's on her own in the parking lot. And I thought of you. I was like, 20 minutes, inciting incident, you know?
Exactly. Like, yeah, exactly.
And I agree with you completely. It does have the hallmarks of the kind of paint-by-numbers scheme.
Yeah, listen, I finished both books now. So I've read Save the Cat. I read Save the Cat a second time because I'm doing my screenplay now. But then I read Sid Field's screenplay, you know, The Guide to a Screenplay. Again, both of them are incredibly formulaic. Like they say, this is the difference between those two books. If you don't want to read them, Sid Field will tell you that you need to write pages and pages and pages about your characters, about everything else. I can't disagree with that. I just think that's a nice to have rather than a necessity.
I think if that's how you write, I think that works. Oh, excuse me. Speaking and yawning.
No, you're fine. But that's exactly it. And I think most of, like, when I talk about those two books with my friends, you know, that are filmmakers, that's exactly kind of the, I'm not going outside the group mentality on that one. Like, no. Save the Cat is the basic blueprint, and you use that, you can construct just about any screenplay that'll work.
And I think that having that kind of really solid foundation, you know, then that's when you can really get to play with things and do creative things with the deaths.
But that's the thing. And I think Screenplay by Sid Field talks about this better, but you're not going off of a single draft, guys. Like, Jesus, like, I am the most fucking confident writer in the world. I was shouting down Katie Bonham to get a chance at a screenplay, and that's suicide, mate. She's a fucking amazing writer. But I was sitting there, I think you were there, and I was like, I'll write this one next. And you know what? It's like, I would still always follow the formula first. You know what I mean? Let me change it on the third draft, or the fifth draft, or the seventh draft. But sure as shit, the first draft should have an act one, an act two, an act three, a midpoint. You know, it should follow what we're used to seeing. Why? Because that's what sells, guys. Mm. Like, you know, if you're not looking to play an art house theater to five people in France, then you have to make a film that's going to go to the theaters, like the movie cinemas. Mm. And this is a really good example of that, is our point. Like,
a really good example of doing the indie thing while still doing the interesting thing, while still doing the formulaic.
Yeah, in fact, I'm giving myself homework because, God, I don't need homework. I'm so tired right now, but I will do this. So I'm going to go away from this, and I'm going to go find the screenplay for Freaky, because it will be somewhere. They're always available online somewhere. And I will find this, and I'm going to go through, and I'm going to do my Save the Cat. I'm going to go find the different points to it and point it out there. Because that stuff helps me. When I'm writing something again, when I've identified it in another film, then it helps me do it in other films. If it's something you're interested in, and we have been talking about this for a number of episodes, so if you're with us, I imagine you are, you need to be doing it all the time. I read probably at least 3 screenplays a week now. I started by reading one, and that's a good way, but I mean, I'll probably get up to 4 or 5 when I'm really into it. And that takes time, and it sucks, but again, it's because you want your writing to emulate the best. And so to do that, you got to watch the best and you got to read the best. This is when I would suggest you do both. Watch this one and read this one, and if you can produce something that resembles not the story, but the form, then you're on to a winner.
Mm. I agree.
All right. Anything else, you know, going to the director, and any shot selections that were particularly good for you on this one that worked, or something to show the listener and say, watch this particular scene because I think they did it well. This isn't one that was overtly big on huge camera work.
No, but I think they did things really, really well in terms of, like, building tension. I'm thinking about the scene where she is waiting to be picked up and it gets late and there's no one around. And it becomes, again, one of those scenes that you've seen a million times, you know. But they did a really good job with starting wide, cutting in close, increasing the speed of the cuts, and just generally building on tension, again, in a way that we've seen, but it's familiar. And
it works. Like, yeah, it works every time. You know what I mean? Don't break the Friday the 13th or the Halloween formula.
They also had one of my favorite shots of the past couple of years. I don't know why. But one of those, like, where it flips, the camera flips from, it kind of goes upside down. Like it does in Black Panther. I don't know if you remember in the throne room.
Yeah. When your guy Killmonger first comes in, that's the image. I remember that because I was there and you squeezed me.
Yeah. And the same thing happens when she walks into the high school.
Oh, really?
And again, it's subconsciously telling you exactly that the world has flipped upside down.
Yeah.
And that everything's kind of...
Well, you know, that kind of stuff I love. And that's why I was talking about limbic system and stuff like that. Like, there is... God, that's a whole nother year of deep dive for me. So I'm saving that for my second film or my third film. But there is an entire psychology to all of this, man. You know what I mean? Just an absolute psychology to the way this works. And I think a lot of it, just from my personal take, because I always tell you what I think, whether you want to listen or not... You know, I think a lot of this has to do, and the reason horror succeeds is because you hit that primal bit of your brain, the one that controls everything, and then you feed it little bits on the top there from your memory part of your brain that brings up those things that you remember but don't necessarily control you. So I think the more you play with that in a horror film, the better you're going to get results with people. So watch that space.
Mm-hmm.
All right, before the two of us pass out, and we literally will, like, pass out face first on this table, we're that tired, I'm going to let you guys go. I love you all. Next week we will have Mitch Bain, who will be much more awake. I'll be bringing coffee if I'm not awake. So, and everybody knows what that means. So please, we'll be talking about the rest of Fright Fest. We saw Evie and The Changed. I saw a bunch more. Well, a little bit more than that. And we'll talk about why I didn't see much more than that. You know, and then I'm sure Mitch has seen twice as much as I have. So he'll be able to kind of comment on the rest. But until then, folks, thank you so much for joining us. Please stick around for next week. And yeah, bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.